Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences on related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests for both experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You're more than welcome to ring in during the show to ask questions or make comments. We also would like to make an announcement that this evening, 1 hour after the broadcast at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, midnight UK time for all of you night owls, we are having our Light on the Water telemeeting, a near-death experience support and interest group meeting via teleconference, again, 1 hour after this radio broadcast. For more information about that, please go to towardthelight.org, scroll down on the index page, and you will see the call-in number. Anyone who can ring an American telephone number can participate in this meeting. Again, Light on the Water, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, midnight UK time. And also, we'd like to let you know that there is an abundance of support and resources available to our organization Toward the Light, not the least of which is this radio broadcast that takes place live every week. Donations are encouraged and welcome and very much appreciated because the utility companies do not honor the barter system. This week, I'm very pleased to have someone I've really been looking forward to having on the show, the author of Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century, Mr. John J. Harper. Welcome to Toward the Light, John.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you, and as I said to you just a moment ago, I've really been enjoying reading your book, just drinking it in like a thirsty little thing here. And one thing that was very interesting that I would like to talk about, and it seems like this kind of catapulted you onto your path, as it were, is that you had a very dear friend, George, whilst you were in the military, and I guess it was after you returned to America that he crossed over, but he did not believe in the afterlife. He just believed that when your body dies, that's it, end of the story, and so on. But then when you, and I guess this took place in Alabama, in the state of Alabama, and then you moved back to Washington State, and sometime thereafter, he appeared to you. So this is very, very interesting, and I thought, aha, you see, and obviously he must have known by then that indeed there was an afterlife, surprise, surprise. So let's talk about this a bit, and then I also want to address the zero point and telepathy and a myriad of other things in this short little hour. So let's get started with that, John, and share with us a bit about this.
Yes, that's exactly, Juliet, where it starts for me. I was a classically trained engineer, computer scientist, up until I saw my friend George Begay, who was a optics physicist by profession, very brilliant young man, who, as you had mentioned, I met while serving in the U.S. Army in Alabama. Then George and I were transferred to Nuremberg, West Germany at the time on the Czechoslovakian border. We were part of a very elite missile unit, and we had bonded and formed a great friendship. And subsequently, both of us had married girls from Alabama, and then they followed on to Nuremberg to be with us. So we had quite a social bonding between the wives and George and myself. And then we had children. And so we had quite a family unit there for a number of years, almost 20 years, from the late 1960s till George died suddenly in November of 1987 on the way to work. He had a massive heart attack at age 40 and actually died in the presence of the family physician there in Huntsville, Alabama. But I attended his very elaborate Catholic funeral. He was raised in southern Louisiana, had a large family, and he and I had a lot of discussions, philosophical, theological discussions over the years, and basically he had just fallen away from the belief system of the Christian church in general. He was someone who I think was probably still open-minded, but he was very much the hard left-brain scientist type.
Yeah.
And so when he died in November of 87, I went into a deep grief period and asked to be transferred actually to my hometown area with the government in the Seattle, Washington area where I had grown up. And one early spring morning in June 1988, as I was awakening for the morning from what I thought was a very lucid dream of my friend George, but as I came out of that hypnagogic state, the state where you're not really asleep, you're not really awake yet, and as I came out of that, what I thought was a vision of my friend George, I saw him physically shimmering in a great ball of light, you might say, in front of me. It was a holographic projection of him, I realize now with the science, you know, maturing to put words to this experience. But what really shook me to my core was the fact that he was standing there smiling at me, and within my mind, I could then link up with him, and what I realized was a telepathic experience. However, I'd like to say at the onset that we have a very limited understanding of telepathy, because this was more than thought. This was intense feeling and a tremendous sense of being connected to a presence beyond our current level of consciousness.
Yes, and this is going to be something really, really good to get into to further, too. And another point that I'd sort of like to interject with is, too, because I'm a medium, and I think, truth be told, most of us are inherently natural mediums. But I've written and spoken a number of times. In fact, I even write this, mention this in my article called The Dying Process from an Experiencer's Perspective, that when we see friends, loved ones being on the other side, but what we were seeing is exactly what you said, is a holographic projection for the sake of recognition.
Yes, exactly. It seems that consciousness itself has all the information, all the biological as well as spiritual information that needs to be linked together, as it were, to convey a meaningful experience to us.
Yes. So that's very powerful. Go ahead with your story about this. It's very interesting.
Well, after I saw my friend George that early morning in June 1988, I went on a very deep examination of the scientific literature and metaphysical literature, which I had not been exposed to prior to that moment in time. I had really confined myself to the hard sciences as well, especially electronics and information science that led to the computer revolution later. However, what really started to evolve was this idea that we're, you might say, embedded within a field of mind, a consciousness that is literally the living being that we would call the Earth herself, or Gaia from the Greek. But equally important for me was this idea that DNA was a living crystal that simply did not die when we, when we physically fall off. Our consciousness basically regroups itself, and we go on. But so, in other words, the body is mainly a cocoon, and the butterfly takes flight.
And you know, thank you for mentioning that too, because I really love in your little bio where you say that human beings are infantile in that they think that they are caterpillars and we are actually butterflies. And I thought,
yes,
so perfect.
Well, you know, the Mayans, you know, we could even go way into that, but we could just say it shortly that, you know, that the Mayans saw the center of the Milky Way galaxy, which now is coming into discussions more and more about era 2012 and that calendar system. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they saw Hunab-Ku, or what we would call God or cosmic consciousness, as really representing the symbol of the butterfly, and then that level of consciousness was really at what we call the black hole at the center of the Milky Way. But the way this ties into this discussion, Juliet, is the idea that I started running into those kinds of symbols and ideas more and more as I investigated the ancient documents, realizing that Much of this stuff that we think is really, you know, kind of a hot topic today is really embedded in all the spiritual literatures of the world, including the Bible, the Old and New Testament. And that was quite shocking to me personally, to see that what we have is this very elaborate ancient wisdom symbol system that's coming through now in sacred geometry and calendar systems, etc. So, you know, what we're really doing is waking up, I think, as a species to this idea that there was an intention, a meaningful design to all of life, and we're just now waking up to that fact again.
Boy, isn't that the truth, and it really is about remembering.
Yes.
Who we are and what is real, and it isn't something new by any means. It, as you said, it's been here for always, and this quickening is exceptionally powerful that's going on right now. And there's been so much talk about the DNA, too, and that was another thing that I wanted to talk about, because I was actually talking with a friend last night, and you know, as an MD ear, and it's so hard to put stuff into words, especially because I don't really know the scientific jargon, as it were. You know, describing frequencies and vibration and the difference between sound and light. And so somehow last night I had a vision, and since you're more scientific, maybe you can help me understand this, but I was seeing the light as the RNA and the sound as the DNA.
That's very, very interesting. Of course, this entire process of DNA being a memory bank, one that actually does not die when we die. In other words, it crystallizes.
It's interdimensional, and the fact is, 95 to 97% of the DNA is regarded as so-called junk DNA, which couldn't be further from the truth.
Yes,
and this
that's
is
right.
Why I see is the multidimensionality of the DNA, and there's so much more to it than people can even realize.
Well, the important thing for me that's coming to the front burner of our consciousness is that the ancients saw space itself as alive and conscious. In other words, the ocean of consciousness of which we're embedded even right now as we have this conversation and our listeners tuning into us are doing, we're actually interacting with the space that we're embedded in through our breath, aren't we? I mean, we breathe in and we breathe out, and in the meantime we're carrying on this conversation. But what the ancients knew was that we're actually embedding our consciousness back on the out-breath back into the space around us, and we're actually drawing the totality of all consciousness, all animal, plant, mineral life forms on this planet, back into us to be processed to the body, which is this huge transmuter of energy.
Mm.
And so in physics, why this is important, even beyond the human level, is that we can see the Earth now is embedded in this, what we call now a hyperdimensional space, a space that has everything in it, all our thoughts, all our feelings, and that the Earth, the center of the Earth, you might say is the heartbeat, is the great in-breath. It's breathing through from the North and South Poles in and out all the time. So it's processing our stuff, we're processing its stuff, and we're becoming this living, gigantic Earth system.
And the interesting thing about being an experiencer, and in the ear, and even when I would go to spiritually transformative experiences, I would feel and experience directly that total oneness and that total love and no sense of separation from anything at all.
Yes.
Just that pure light and that pure love, which, again, just can't be described, but, oh, man.
It could be experienced.
Oh, absolutely. And, in fact, I'm taken to putting my degree after my name, EXP.D, Doctor of Experience.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful idea. Yes.
Because I think that is, you know, it's monumental to... And the reason that I can have these experiences because of, dialogues, because of, being too ill to make it to university. Well, I've been to the university of life and interdimensional life, thank you very much, and experience. And so, and this is very powerful, and it looks like that, you know, your beloved friend, the experiences with him really catapulted you into this, because it feels like this work, it was something that was already brewing inside of you.
Well, yes, and I think what it did for me was it really was this dynamic shock that I needed to wake up to this greater reality that you're discussing. Let me share just a little bit about, you know, one of the fellows I feature in my book is the near-death experiencer Danyon Brinkley.
Yes.
And I have a cute little story from Danyon. Danyon was mingling with left-brain scientists like myself at a meeting one time, and they had on their name tags, you know, after it was the MD and PhD and the Master of Science, this and that. So he decided to shock them, and what he did, he just put Danyon Brinkley DOA, dead on arrival.
So, I remember that, too, because I read his book, and
that's it.
He might be coming up on the show sometime soon. Of course, we're booked up through June now.
Oh, yeah.
But, and it's wonderful, the magnificent people that have come on to this show, and all of the tremendous material that we're sharing. I know. You know, there's something interesting, too, that you're mentioning in your book, and you're talking about the, getting back to some of the symbolism again.
Yes.
The fish. And I noticed that you were making comments and even asking questions about the fish, and through my research, what I have discovered is the fish is representing the Piscean Age, which we are currently moving out of.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
And so the symbol of Jesus, as it were, is that of the Piscean Age, for the Christians who resonate with that analogy or figure or what have you. And you also mentioned, you're talking a lot about the astrological wheel and the ages and how everything is really circular. There's a great depth in all of this because, again, when I was on the other side, there was no sense of time, space. Nothing is linear.
Yes, that's
nothing
right. It's all happening at once simultaneously, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what it was. And, I can see people scratching their heads, from their mortal mind vantage point, thinking, how do they do that? What does that feel like? And, again, that's ever so hard to describe, but it's sort of like... when I've looked at a radar screen, you get an overview of everything simultaneously. You can see where something has been, where it is now, where it's going. And so I like to use the analogy of the radar screen because it does provide a very good overview and a good illustration of what something like this can feel like.
Well, yes. In fact, now we can shift then into a brief discussion of zero-point energy from that. Zero-point energy, which is the energy that is available even at absolute 0 degrees, so hence the term zero point. What we thought was part of the creation process turned out not to be the case. In other words, we thought that all life would stop, all energy and information flow would stop at zero point, and it does not. There's a residual energy that is still in the vacuum of space, also called the cosmic background radiation, but what's really important about that is we're now realizing that that perhaps is the source of consciousness itself. In other words, that consciousness is immortal. I think those of us who have had these metaphysical experiences know that now beyond a doubt. But, it takes some of us scientist types a little bit longer to process that because we're not used to really feeling our way into reality. We're living in our heads, as we say, and not our hearts. But I think that's changing pretty quickly now.
Thank goodness, yes.
Yeah, thank God. I say yes, absolutely.
But something that concerns me also about the scientific community, quote-unquote, is the fact that they have still been too focused on, time, space, and perceiving the physical plane as, quote-unquote, reality, whereas I honestly beg to differ on that one.
Well, yes, exactly. What the Earth turns out to be is a huge petri dish that's trying to grow consciousness, and that the cellular body is basically just this quarantine state, as I put it. We're just under quarantine until we mature enough so we don't hurt the entire living Earth herself through some type of silliness like nuclear, events.
Yes, and the word that comes up to me when I see all of this silly nonsense is fear. And
Yes.
You know, fear stems out of ignorance. And,
yes, of not knowing the truth, of not knowing that there's a great experience available to us that would actually dissolve that fear just immediately.
Now, would you like to tell us a bit about some of the experiences that you've had, John, that really kind of brought all of this home for you?
Well, one of the things that comes to mind readily that I shared in the opening part of my book was when I was a young man in elementary school, I grew up in a little town called Pacific City, Washington, which is at the base of Mount Rainier. And so I had a kind of a very idyllic childhood in the natural sense of the term. I was very close to nature, and I think that had something to do with my sensitivity to what's going on even today with the planet and climate change and all those events too. But when I was a young boy, I was looking out one morning at the base of Mount Rainier, and I had this profound experience. It really shook me to my core and also kept me very humble as an adult in terms of my learning in science. I never did shift into that atheistic orientation, even though that was where my schooling was leading most of my classmates, I felt at the time. But I had this experience where I was looking at Mount Rainier, and all of a sudden, I had this spontaneous thought in my mind. I said, what am I doing here again? It was very innocent and very spontaneous.
Yeah.
And without even maybe a fraction of a second in delay, I heard this still, small voice coming from the very center of my own mind. In other words, I knew it was not being heard by my classmates, but the voice said to me, very personal voice and very still, very small and very strong, it said, John, if not you, then someone else. And that shook my budding ego to its roots. And I realized in my own little 8-year-old mind that being here on this planet was a gift, that it was a very cherished event for anyone to be here and be part of the process of life in the human body. Or as one of my friends said, being the human part of God is awesome. And that really kept me on a kind of on a, you know, a balance beam. I didn't try to shift too far left or right on any subject, scientific, political, religious, or any other. So I've kind of tried to walk kind of a narrow path in terms of trying to gather information from the scientific community as well as the religious community and try to integrate them. And that's what that experience meant. At that time for me was that I should take from the left and the right and bring them towards the center. And so that's kind of been the theme of my life.
So you two would be what we call the bridge. And I was talking to a friend of mine in Nashville who's an engineer. She does sound engineering, but she's also kind of a borderline physicist. I think she's very fascinating. She's written a book. And, you know, we were talking about the fact that the whole idea of writing this book for her is to bridge the gap between, as she calls it, the intuitives and the scientific community.
Yes. In fact, you know, this goes back even to Albert Einstein, who even, you know, later in life confirmed in his writings, he said that the imagination was equally important, if not more so, than intelligence. And what he meant by that was that, you know, when he formed his theory of light, theory of relativity, he realized that when he was a young man, I believe he was in his teenage years, he used to envision what it would be like to ride a beam of light throughout space. And so he realized that from that symbolic vision, that imaginal portrayal, he was able to tap some very meaningful ideas later in life and then put the mathematics to it. And in fact, you know, Albert Einstein admitted that he wasn't very good at mathematics, although I would beg to differ if you look at some of those equations. But my son's a mathematician, so I can say that. I mean, my son knows more about that kind of stuff than I'll ever know in this lifetime.
Yeah.
I think that what we're doing, Juliet, is we're really converging now on this idea that physics and metaphysics is part of the same great picture of reality. And once we get these two together, I think it's going to be phenomenal. I think things will really come together. I think we're going to see new green-type technologies emerge now that are going to absolutely lead to such incredible ideas as being able to help the planet restore herself back to wellness and way beyond that. A lot of folks, see, they think in the spiritual community think we're here to basically evaporate in a great big ball of light and then ascend into another realm. The real short term, and I mean for the next several hundred years, will be to really bring the earth back to pristine condition. In other words, you know, the Creator is saying, you're going to clean up your room or you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, very good. That's excellent. And I think it's so important that, I mean, sure, you know, there isn't a day goes by that, you know, I say, oh, come on, Scotty, beam me up, you know, it's so much nicer there. But at the same time, I realize, too, and I am filled with joy to be doing the work here on this plane, that, you know, I think it's very important to work on creating a similar kind of frequency so that we can experience that pristine love and beauty and wholeness on all dimensions, not just, you know, we don't need to leave the third dimension out. You know, the third dimension can also be raised to one of pristine balance and harmony.
Yes, absolutely. The way I look at this, I mean, no matter how lofty my ideas are, you know, my head still needs my feet connected to it.
Yes, exactly. And there's a saying about that, too. Whilst your head is in the clouds, keep your feet firmly on the ground.
Yes, and remember some of the great spiritual avatars and teachers, such as Jesus. You know, he said, you know, the Lord's Prayer, for example, says, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Well, what good would it be to ascend to heaven if there's no heavenly beings living on earth?
Yeah.
And so, and the other thing, too, I think the practical aspect of that for me is to realize that what the human body is just this huge collection of diamonds, diamonds in the rough. And I use the analogy when I talk to folks about, you know, a light bulb that has a dimmer switch attached to it is still a light bulb. In other words, it still has a potential to light a room even when the dimmer switch is down. And so what we are is like light bulbs with the dimmer switch turned down. And so what we're doing now is starting to turn the dimmer switch up. And how this is happening and how what we see in terms of earth changes is the earth turning the light up from the center out. See, the center, the core of the earth is taking more and more energy from the surrounding space, the cosmic radiation, background radiation, this zero point again, this zero point is now allowing, gating more information, more light, more energy through the core of the earth. And that's what we're seeing now with the melting of the polar ice caps. That's what we're seeing in the oceans that are warming and cooling rapidly and leading to these tremendous tug-of-wars between, say, the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. And this is what we can expect to happen in the very near future, leading up to 2012 events and beyond, will be this tremendous energy transformation that's going on at the very core of the Earth and then up through the planet, up through us, but also animals, plants, minerals. Everything's being impacted. So this is a time of chaos. However, all chaos, we know, leads to more order.
Well, that's what I think, too, and I think it's a really valuable and viable wake-up call, again, getting back to consciousness, waking up and remembering who we are and what is real. And, you know, getting back to Einstein talking about the importance of imagination, of course, I've been, you know, a musician, an artist, a creative type, right brainer all of my life, and also a mystic, and going into trance and always having visions and these creative ideas and fantasizing, and I think that that is vitally important because that is actually how we can get in touch with and access the other dimensions and real, you know, like these light bulbs going off and what have you. And also, you know, this leads me into wanting to talk about telepathy, too, because I think it's vitally important that people realize the validity of this vital form of communication. And, in fact, a number of people have even written about, talked about the fact that at one time on this planet, the whole form of communication was done telepathically. There wasn't languages. It was all telepathic. And so with telepathy, there's no room for misunderstanding or taking things out of context.
Yes, that's right. And really, to get the big picture of this, we can go back to the ancient documents, the mythologies, the stories, the legends that the ancients left us. And that's right. There was a pristine, absolutely beautiful Garden of Eden type environment, kind of an eternal spring, as many put it. But we see that folks like Michael Cremo, who I quote in my book, who wrote a book called Human Devolution. And what he means by that is that we do not really evolve. We have come down, you say, in energy, in light, in consciousness. So the fall is a fall in consciousness.
Yes.
And
yes.
What we are doing now, again, is turning the dimmer switch back up to full-on power. And there's a way to look at this, I think, that's more powerful for those of us who are scientifically oriented. We know that space is really this huge collection of crystals. The ancients, like Plato, said, you know, there's a certain geometry, that there's five basic geometries, the so-called Platonic solids. And we know that this is the natural state of space itself, that, you know, there's great disciplines in chemistry and crystallography and material science, and this ancient knowledge has been used today. For example, the computer science revolution is based on the silicon chip, and this idea that we can control, lessen, or increase energy flow through any particular physical matter is important. Once you understand that physical matter is not physical, it's really had emerged from space itself. And, you know, Francis Crick, who was the given credit for the DNA macromolecule findings, he had a theory called panspermia. And that meant that he realized that life did not come from the Earth per se, but from deep space or from another realm. And then, in essence, impregnated the Earth because the conditions for life were perfect. And life came from that convergence. I think that that's probably closer to the truth than anything I've ever, found. And I think it links up with this idea of the ancients that, you know, we've come down from a higher realm of consciousness to inhabit this planet. But the point you're trying to make here with telepathy is that if we change the geometry of the Earth, which I believe that is going on at the core, and we're running more energy through it, and then consequently we're running it through our liquid crystal DNA molecules, this so-called 97% junk DNA that you referred to earlier is exactly the coded information that is now being accessed and shifting our entire physical body into this tuning mechanism, like a tuning fork, that's now able to pick up very, very high frequency communication. And that, I believe, is what is happening all over the planet. And I think we'll see this psychic sensitivity increased, a million fold in the very near future.
And that's very, very exciting to me, and something that I think we really need to pay attention to, because there's so much that is going on now. And of course, it's causing a lot of tension too, because people are sort of being shaken out of their comfort zones of familiarity. But to me, it isn't at all spelling disaster. It is realigning us to, again, who and what we really are. And those of us who have, been able to experience the other side, have seen this firsthand. And it's very clear and very easy and very straightforward in this way. The whole thing with the DNA, for example, something else that comes to mind too is that we purportedly only use 10% of our brain. So again, imagine if we had access to 100% of the brain and the 100% of the DNA.
Well, this in fact is where trance comes into this discussion now, Juliet. What we're really doing when we go into a trance state is, first of all, we're rebalancing the left and right hemisphere of the brain. What is the brain really? Well, it's a liquid semiconductor circuit. It's filled with neurons, which are really liquid crystals. And so the left and right brain, when it is unified, enters a state of higher level consciousness. Now, from the outside, it would look like we're retreating from the world, but as you and I would know, we're actually getting in touch with the real world.
Exactly.
And so we're tuning out the noise, which you might call our civilization, our indoctrinations, our teachings, our lack of wisdom, actually. We're tuning out from that false reality, those perceptions that are really illusions. They're illusions because they're not the whole truth. What they are is limited perceptions of beings who don't know what they're doing yet.
Yes, exactly.
And so when we look at the world, we see chaos. We see this group doing that, another group doing something else. But what we really want to do is come together as one human being. Because there's only one DNA molecule. There's 20 amino acids that are used to reconfigure our experiences in life, but there's only one DNA molecule for all animals, plants, humans, etc. So when you really understand that that's true, and it is, then you suddenly wake up and you're seeing that the Earth is populated now by about 6.5 billion set of eyes that are all connected to the same brain.
And so here again is proof that we are one.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, amen. That's it. Yeah, we're one planet, one people, and we're waking up to that truth, and we realize if we hurt someone on the other side of the globe, eventually we'll be hurt in concert with the amount of damage that we did, because we're all part of a living system that is really connected to the electromagnetic fields of this planet, and we're tapping this, what Catholic theologian and paleontologist Pierre Teilhard de Chardin
said. Oh, I love him, yes.
You love him too, yes.
Oh,
but,
God.
What he said many, many decades ago was that there's, evolution is not through with us yet. We're creating this huge minefield called a new sphere, from the Greek meaning mind, a sphere of mind, and that every one of us are participating at one level or another, whether we know it or not. And what we see, of course, is the chaos that comes from not knowing. That's what generates fear in people.
Exactly.
It's not knowing their deeper connection to the oneness, isn't it?
Mm, yes, and, yeah. And again, here we're talking about the fear of the unknown, and people just go, ah! And I remember an NDE who, bless him, was able finally to graduate, George Rodenayer. He was actually in the morgue and then brought onto the autopsy table and came to. And when he was talking to Dr. Raymond Moody in his book, Life After Life, Raymond Moody's book, they were going through this segment about talking about hell. And George was indicating that his interpretation of hell is the fear of the unknown.
Yes, it's the not knowing aspects.
Whoa.
That create that chaotic sense of fear. And remember from George's own story, when he came back to life, he was, on the autopsy table, if I recall right.
Exactly.
Back there in Russia, in the Soviet Union in those days. And what he found was that as he came out of body and entered this profound darkness, was that, he had an option. He could basically sit at that level of consciousness, or he could start thinking happy thoughts. And as he did, he started rising in consciousness. And I think that was a profound insight that, our minds take us both in body and out of body to the level of resonance that we allow to experience.
And that's a very important point right there as well, because we've all, to one degree or another, have been living in an amnesic state.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, when we're traversing through this fog, it's going to cause a lot of confusion and, oh my goodness, what's going on here, kind of thing. And so as people can start to wake up and realize, number one, we are immortal. We do live forever. Death is indeed an illusion. And in fact, that's what was constantly being driven to me whilst I was on the other side. I had to come back to this plane to share the message that death is an illusion and that this plane is actually an illusion. It's a hologram.
Yes.
And, we could create a very beautiful hologram if we wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in our power to do that. So I think it's really important that people realize that, life and our selfhood is not finite, because I think that's the one thing that people really trip over is this fear of mortality. Mm-hmm. And, they have everything coming to an end. And,
yes.
And also feeling so small and powerless and little me, and we need to get out of that kind of mentality. So I think that, when we can start to become, well, let me back up just a little bit, because unfortunately with religion, and I don't resonate with religion, because of how it has demonized all of these powerful truths, psychic is of the devil, or, all that malarkey.
Again, the fear is from the not knowing the truth.
Exactly.
And that's where Gnosticism came in. And, the Greeks were famous, too, with the axiom, know thyself.
Yes.
Right. And so, of course, we know that from personal experience, that can shatter the illusions that have been, the blinders, or that they've been part of turning the dimmer switch down to the point where we're, dumb and blind, and in terms of consciousness. But, I wanted to briefly comment on one of the insights I was given from doing my research and from some experiences with my deceased friend George. The body loves us. The body loves life. The body is life itself. It is filled with, these trillions of cells that are all doing their very best to work in harmony, to unify themselves in this tremendous dance of energy and information that we call biology and chemistry. And one of the things, when a near-death experiencer mentions to me that they, it wasn't their time yet, or they were called back for a reason, and then you ask them what their reason was to be here, and they'll look sometimes, if it's in the early years, they'll say, I don't know. I really don't know what it is. I would suggest that the reason is that your body had something to do with that. Your body was not through with the life process. And it's a great gift to be here in the body. But interestingly, and after very profound mystical encounters with the light, one of the things I find, too, is we kind of spontaneously begin to take better care of the body. We might become vegetarian, or we might become, more interested in healing the body than ever before. Why would that be if we want to throw the body away and return to the light? It's because the body is the vehicle of consciousness that we're trying to turn the light back up to full volume.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I think that's something that needs to be shared more and more. The reason for being here is to being alive in the body.
And ideally to raise that body again into a balanced, harmonious state,
you know.
Because I think it can be free of dis-ease. And again, I think that dis-ease, a lot of this stuff that is off kilter is really about ignorance, wouldn't you say?
Totally. It's totally about that. And one of the things that my studies have revealed to me and what I share in my book is that, the Earth, when it's in a perfect alignment, when it's fully well herself, when she's upright, you might say, and not tilted off kilter at 23.5 degrees on her axis, when the North Pole and the physical North Pole and the magnetic North Pole are aligned, I believe that's what gives us this full Garden of Eden experience. And so what I see happening with the melting of the polar ice caps that I try to really stay in touch with, and I'm always writing about this on my blog and at my website, is that that will be the key factor in consciousness evolution. Once the shift happens, and the shift will be an electromagnetic pole shift, a realignment of the physical and geomagnetic north, once we see that, we're going to wake up in greater numbers, and this will take it'll be a process, not an event. A lot of us have already woken up 10, 20, 30 years ago. Some of us are waking up right now, and others will wake up 10 or 20 years from now. But a good critical threshold of us, I think, will really achieve a great awakening on or about the 2012 event. And the important point, though, is it's a geophysical event, and that this alignment with the center of the Milky Way galaxy is extremely important. I think we need to pay attention to this, not get caught up in the wild speculation aspects, but realize it's a natural cycle, but with very unnatural spin-offs from it.
Now, I'm wondering if, we really start changing our thinking about a number of things starting right now, if this will actually affect how this polar shift occurs and how it impacts us, the severity of it or what have you.
Yeah, I believe the severity of the event itself can be mitigated, can be lessened, if we can wake up now and pull together instead of pushing each other apart. And conversations like you and I are having today are very important because they give those of us who have not had the opportunity yet, who have either not had the experience itself of being, in the transcendental state of mind, or have not had an opportunity to really look at the scientific data and put it together in this way. I think that being able to look at this and then just shifting one's mind into this new way of being can definitely impact the shift and the polar event in a very positive direction.
And I also think that people need to give themselves a lot more credit than they have been because, for example, bless you, when you were a child, you listened to that voice speaking to you, and I am certain that everybody hears these voices.
Yeah.
They just swap them off. That's nothing.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many clients come to me and they question their sanity. Is this just wishful thinking or am I hallucinating or am I going crazy or whatever?
Yeah.
And, to all of those questions, I say absolutely not.
That's right. And so it
really has broken me heart that... that society, the powers that be, unfortunately a sinister group at the top, has really been very adamant about dumbing us down and keeping us out of touch with our true identity.
Well, yes, the light has both the dark shadow aspects
sure.
as well as the beautiful, life-giving aspects. And yes, and of course, again, that comes from fear, too. Why would a person take the dark side over the light side? Well, I think it's a shortcut to some type of reward,
yeah.
And what it is really something that's going to feed back on them and give them tremendous problems at some point.
But the good news, too, about this is that, that so many people, including myself, have survived untold challenging and traumatic experiences and been sent back to this plane. And I think, if it were all in vain, then why would so many of us have been sent back? Why would other people who've not even had near-death experiences be able to endure other traumatic events? Why is this an incredible awakening going on? All of these dialogues taking place. In fact, this last year, 2007, I was seeing monumental increase of dialogue about all of this stuff. How would all this be happening if it weren't really case in point that the light is going to triumph over this shadowy imbalance that we're currently experiencing?
Yes, it will indeed overcome the darkness because the darkness cannot take this level of energy without shattering. And that's the key hope that keeps me going. I realize that every single rotation of the Earth in space, every single day and night cycle, every seasonal cycle, etc., all of this is leading to a tremendous opening into the light. And so there's no doubt it will happen. The question is, will those of us who refuse to open to the light, will we survive the transition, the shift of the ages? And in my opinion, the answer is no.
Yeah.
Because everything is a crystalline substance. DNA is a liquid crystal. And what we were talking about earlier in the hour, the idea that the Earth is now increasing in vibration and frequency, that we're in solar cycle 24, which NASA scientists like David Hathaway have already stated that sunspot cycles and solar energy events will become more powerful as we converge on the year 2011-2012 time frame than any time since Galileo put his eyes to the telescope 400 years ago.
Wow, wow. And there has indeed been a lot of, the sun's been getting hotter. And the global warming, but everything is cyclic, and I think that people need to be responsible indeed, but not fall into this fear, oh my God, you know, it's just...
Exactly.
We really need to be in a place of love.
We need to be in a place of acceptance and a place of peace. We need to be in a position of prayer, and we need to come together and understand that we're all in this together, and that we can overcome the dark, and we are going to do so. And we're all probably going to have a great cosmic giggle one day when we look back at what we went through.
Well, actually, I've experienced that kind of thing on the other side, and it's so fun just to think about feeling so light and free, and that wonderful, profound feeling of being so completely connected with all life on all dimensions. And so, you know, this kind of stuff isn't pie in the sky, and I'm so grateful that, you know, that the scientific community, at least in part, is starting to really, you know, we're touching hands and hearts here.
Absolutely. You know, my good friend and colleague, cell biologist Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Oh, yes, Bruce, yes.
Yeah, he wrote, you know, the foreword to my book, and he's gone on to really receive tremendous acceptance in the scientific community as well as the general public all over this planet. I mean, he spent last year, I remember talking to his partner Margaret, and they were just getting ready to go to New Zealand, where he was teaching medical school for a quarter in New Zealand in Auckland. So, I mean, you know, he's been accepted at every level in the scientific community. And I remember when Bruce was, you know, basically just kind of roaming the streets talking to fire hydrants and anything that would stand still long enough, you know. And so, yeah, it's been a great, you know, vicarious thrill for me to see him, you know, just become so wide known. I expect him, you know, to be on the Oprah Winfrey show very soon now. So.
Well, I've got a confession to make. I have never once seen that program.
Uh-huh.
I don't even own a television, and for some reason, even when I visited friends, I have never ever seen the Oprah, right? Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
All right.
She's one of the great enlightened beings on this planet. So.
Well, indeed, yeah. I think she's from Tennessee, and I had actually read a biography about her. Because I did live in Nashville for a number of years.
Oh, did you? Yeah, I have property just southeast of Nashville there in the Cumberland Mountains.
Oh, gosh, it's gorgeous there, isn't it?
Yeah,
yes.
In a little town called Mont Eagle, Tennessee.
I know it well. Yes, indeed. In fact, I almost moved there once because I wanted to escape the city. But
did you really? Yeah, there's a lovely gal there, a young gal that's going to run for mayor of Mont Eagle, and I just was talking with this earlier in the week, so... Yeah, marvelous. Michelle Russell is her name. But, yeah, so that's neat that we have that connection there through Nashville.
Oh, it's such a tremendously small universe, isn't it?
And my good friend William Henry. I don't know if you know William Henry.
I know. Well, we exchanged readings.
Wonderful.
He doesn't respond to emails. Hey, William, what's the matter? Like, come on. yeah, in fact, he's written some interesting stuff about a lot of the symbolism you find in nature.
Yeah,
that's quite
yeah.
a vortex, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of power in Nashville, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. It's you know, Music City, USA, but it's way beyond that, too, now. So.
Oh, isn't it? Well, it's interesting how that place, of all the places I've lived all over America, including Hawaii, Nashville really spoke to me for some reason, and I'm definitely not a Christian, nor am I into country music, so go figure.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, well, there's obviously some good energy vortexes flowing through there, you know.
Well, an interesting thing that happened really shortly after I moved to Nashville, and this is so curious, is that a crop circle suddenly popped up in Brentwood.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, right after. Now, It was, because, see, I lived in Nashville, then I returned to New England, then I moved back to Nashville, and I don't remember if it's when I moved back to Nashville or when I was living in Nashville the first time, but shortly after I I arrived in Nashville, a crop circle just formed in, unfortunately, a churchyard, and they blocked it off so that nobody could see it or access it, which I thought was a pity. But, yeah, it's...
There's the fear factor again.
There we go, exactly. And that's really unfortunate because, you know, there's so much wisdom that can be gleaned from all of this stuff. I always pay attention when something is happening. What is the message in that? What is it telling me? Because, again, the communications goes way beyond the telephone or the email or what have you.
Well, again, we're talking about sacred geometry, the platonic solids. We're talking about the Earth herself as a living, conscious being that is basically tattooing herself on the surface of her skin and sharing with us the knowledge that's bubbling up, the energy that's bubbling up from within the core of the Earth and tattooing itself in these fields of grain. And so if you look at the crop circles, more of a tattoo of ancient wisdom and sacred geometry, you get the bigger picture of what's going on.
Wow, yeah. I think it's very important to pay attention to this, too, and to not question it or doubt it. And, you know, really to see the divinity in all things. Well, do you have any quick announcements you want to make? Well, I already see that we've already got this hour flown by us here.
No, I've just enjoyed it immensely. I hope we get an opportunity to do this again in 2008.
Well, it's going to be wonderful. And again, this wonderful book by, we've been speaking with John J. Harper, author of the book Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. It's a tremendous book. And just about an hour from now, again, we are going to have our Light on the Water near-death experience support and interest group meeting via teleconference. So to get the phone number to ring in to participate in the conference, please go to towardthelight.org, scroll down to where you see Light on the Water, and the phone number and the access code is right there. You've been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with a heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please do remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week when we talk to Mr. David Oakford, coming on Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. Blessings and light to all. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you next week.
Hi, this is Brentwood from Legion of Love. Just letting you know you can now hear some of our new released and unreleased tracks on our website, legionoflove.com. You can also purchase